with a huge expansion of, it's not just ADHD, but depression, of trauma-related diagnoses of any number. And all the while, there are certain diagnoses that haven't increased at all, like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, these severe and often enduring mental illnesses that are getting smaller and smaller amounts of resources.
I've got three hats, if you like, that I bring to this discussion. So my first hat is as a frustrated autism brain imaging researcher who needs the descriptions and distinctions that diagnoses can offer. My second hat is an autism diagnosis advocate, if you like, appealing for the recognition and validation and identity that a diagnosis can offer. My book is about underdiagnosis, rather bizarrely in this debate, looking at the history of autism and how and why so many women and girls have been missed out of this community to which they need to belong. It's so hard to find diagnosed autistic females that for some 30 years in my own research community, we've effectively been carrying out men-only studies. So women have autism, but they've not been included in research. Boys are 10 times more likely to be referred for autism diagnosis than girls, not because there are 10 times more boys than girls that have autism or are autistic, but because there is this kind of mindset which autism is a boy thing, has kind of biased the story. Noam Chomsky has a great quote about what science is. Science is like the drunk who's dropped his keys on the other side of the road and is looking for them under the lamppost, because that's where the light is. And I think that's what research into autism has been like. It's a boy thing, so let's just look at boys. Let's work out a diagnostic schedule which will spot the boys, etc. And if you listen to the stories of these late diagnosed women and what they've gone through throughout their lives because they haven't been recognized early on, and the histories of distress and abuse that they've suffered, and once they get that diagnosis, almost universally, they say, thank goodness, at last my life makes sense. I found my tribe. So for them, that diagnosis is really important. It's not just a label. It's an identity. And I think that's something that this debate sometimes forgets.
I've wondered about this question. You know, what does it mean to have a mental health label? And I say, and I hope it doesn't sound too flippantly, but I would probably go into now, but I often see on Twitter biographies, you'll see people put their mental health label, you know, West Ham United, you know, mother of two, ADHD or something. And I was thinking, well, that's an odd thing to put. You know, the whole sort of, the whole thing about stigma was not defining yourself by a particularly narrow label. And I was thinking also, you know, you'd never see Chelsea taxi driver, you know, command hallucinations or paranoid delusions. You know, there are sort of ways in which the sort of identification of mental health problems has become a very current sort of concept. And I often think that people previously, I think, had a structure and a framework for understanding their suffering, which was very different. You know, I think religious structures before might have said your suffering is divinely ordained or your position in life, or it may be that you were connected in a network of people suffering similarly. But I think there is something now about the atomization of society, about the way in which people need to try and make sense of their lives. And often a mental health label is something that helps, you know, make them feel that everything that's wrong about their life is subsumed under this one label. And so that's why I worry about the direction that it's gone in.
One of the issues we sometimes overlook is why are so many people keen to define themselves in terms of a diagnosis? You know, certain diagnoses emerge at certain times in certain places because those times and places have produced that need in people. But I think it indicates that there is a need for people to be able to explain how they are, who they are, how they interact with the world, to make themselves predictable to other people, perhaps.
We don't often do a good enough job of differentiating normal from pathological. Often these things exist on a spectrum. And we know for often the milder end of the spectrum, the typical treatments don't work. So we know, for example, that for for what we now diagnose as mild depression, antidepressants really are not particularly effective. You know, which makes you question, is it really the same diagnosis as those at the more severe end for whom antidepressants are clearly and unequivocally much more effective? And I think, you know, if you take the example of depression and you look at it going from a rare severe disorder treated by psychiatrists in institutions to a common illness treated by generalists in primary care, suddenly you don't know where you are. So I think defining the boundaries is key.
Sometimes the terminology suggests that people sort of wake up one day and think, oh, you know, autism, I think I'll go and get, you know, a diagnosis for that kind of thing. As though it's easy. I mean, we're talking about 5-10 year waiting lists in some areas, and this is a neurodevelopmental disorder. But also people are suffering and need help, and that's why they're asking. I really don't like this thick note from life type terminology. So I'm not saying, you know, just ignore boundaries. And if somebody's seeking help, yes, say they need help. It may be they need a different kind of help. It may be, when you were talking earlier about, you know, maybe a lifestyle coach would be better or a gym membership.
I mean, the D at the end of these things is disorder. And I think sometimes if, you know, the question, and I guess this is a debate, is whether someone that's able to live their lives, able to conceal their problems, socialize, do the things that allow them to maintain what appears to be a normal lifestyle, is that the same illness as someone that's nonverbal and, you know, with a learning disability? At what point do you separate those things on that autism spectrum? And, you know, there are huge waiting lists, but because the resources are having to be spread very thin now. And so it's not that people aren't deserving of help or support in their lives, but once you conceptualize it and send people down a mental health pathway, you get these waiting lists of years that you talk about.
Gina, how do you respond to when people say there is an overdiagnosis epidemic? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I guess I can say, well, have you read this book, which is about the underdiagnosis of women? So I think what that displays is the fragility of that system, which we need to acknowledge. And I think that's something maybe more to do with education. We're raising awareness. And I think the things about screening and actually educating people about what this actually means, this is a probabilistic in some cases, even with physical illness. And we can certainly say with mental illness, you know. So I think the system needs repairing. I mean, I think I read somewhere that if you go through the current diagnostic and statistical manual and work out the various algorithms and combinations of types of problems, I think there's something like 1,479 different ways of getting a diagnosis of depression, which probably says quite a lot about the fact that the diagnostic system does need reforming, but not that we need to get rid of it altogether.
Thank you. Alistair, is there an overdiagnosis epidemic?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's, to my mind, not even a controversial statement anymore. And I know it is controversial for a lot of people, but I think that we have increasing numbers of people who think that they have a diagnosis, self-diagnose, identify with that diagnosis. By the time they come to see me, they're sure that they've got that diagnosis and don't want to hear that they don't have it. And if I say no, they might go to someone else that's more congenial and likely to say yes to them. Because I think that there is a certain language in the population. I mean, we hear about awareness raising all the time as though the only good is to increase that awareness and and I would say we need to be doing a little bit of the opposite. And perhaps this awareness raising is to raise the awareness of the fact that there is a problem, which is that there is a language of mental health, a language in which people start to identify with symptoms, wonder if it applies to them. Every time GPs hear about awareness raising, their knees buckle and they think, you know, the number of people now that are going to come through my door thinking that they have the diagnosis, it's ever expanding. And we can see with a huge expansion of it's not just ADHD, but depression or trauma-related diagnoses of any number. And all the while, there are certain diagnoses that haven't increased at all, like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, these severe and often enduring mental illnesses that are getting potentially smaller and smaller amounts of resources. So it's not just that it's harmful for individuals, because I think you take agency away from someone. When you say to someone you were traumatized, you're telling them that really someone needs to do something to them now to make them better. And I think so for individuals, for society, it's not a good thing, but also you divert resources away from, I think, people that would benefit the most. So I think it's not an abstract problem over diagnosis.
But I would also say, just in terms of something that's been said, I see myself as representing the people who haven't been diagnosed. And I've certainly been overwhelmed by messages from late diagnosed women, what happens when you don't get a diagnosis. So I think airily saying, well, there's too much diagnosis these days. Bear in mind that there are people who need some kind of, whatever you call it, identification, that they are struggling. And that without that, their lives have been really impaired. So I think we need to hang on to the importance of a diagnosis. And it may be in chasing that particular goal, maybe some people who are, you know, could be the other side or different, you know, part of the spectrum may receive a diagnosis. But, I put that into the argument as something we mustn't forget.
Thank you. Do you think, what are there any potential dangers when we speak about overdiagnosis? What are the potential downsides to that?
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.